ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text Number 9. Yatta Dharma Daya Chartam Yatta Dharma Daya Chartam Muni Varya Nukirtitam Muni Varya Nukirtitam Natata Vasudevasya Natata Vasudevasya Mahima hi anuvarnitam Mahima hi anuvarnitam Yatha dharma dayaschartam Muni varya nukirtitam Natatha vasudevasyam Mahima hi anuvarnitam. Translation of Prabhupada by His Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yatam, as much as Dharma Adayam, all four principles of religious behavior, Cham, and Artam, purposes. Munivaryam. By yourself, the great sage. Annukirtitam. Repeatedly described. Nam. Not. Tatam. In that way. Vasudevasyam. Of the personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. Mahimam. Glories. Him. Certainly. Anuvarnitam. So constantly described. Translation. Although great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles beginning with religious performances. You have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality, Vasudev. Purport. The prompt diagnosis of Shri Narada is at once declared. The root cause of the despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. He has certainly, as matter of course, given descriptions of glories of the Lord Shri Krishna, but not as many as given to religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and salvation. These four items are by far inferior to engagement in the devotional service of the Lord. Shri Vyasadeva, as the outright scholar, knew very well this difference. And still, instead of giving more importance to the better type of engagement, namely devotional service to the Lord, he had more or less improperly used his valuable time, and thus he was despondent. From this, it is clearly indicated that no one can be pleased substantially without being engaged in devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is clearly mentioned. After liberation, which is the last item in the line of performing religiosity, etc., one is engaged in pure devotional service. This is called the stage of self-realization or the Brahma-Buddha stage. After attainment of this Brahma-Buddha stage, one is satisfied. But satisfaction is the beginning of transcendental bliss. One should progress by attaining neutrality and equality in the relative world. And passing the stage of equanimity, one is fixed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. This is the instruction of the Personality of Godhead in Bhagavad Gita. The conclusion is that in order to maintain the status quo of the Brahma-Buddha stage, as also to increase the degree of transcendentalization, Narada recommended to Vyasadeva that he should now engage in repeatedly this. Narada recommended to Vyasadeva that he should now eagerly and repeatedly describe the path of devotional service. This would cure him from gross despondency. Yata dharma daya charta muni varyani kirtita natatha vasudevasya mahimahi anuvarnita. Although great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles beginning with religious performances. You have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Vasudev. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gnanjana Chalataya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vancha kalpataru vyacha kripa sinu gayavacha patitana pavane vyo vaishnave vyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Chivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, everyone. So, we are continuing description of the conversation between Shri Narada and Shri Vyasadeva. And as we heard yesterday from Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu, Shri Vyasadeva, he compiled all these Vedic literatures, and it wasn't, you know, a simple task that, you know, just took short time. You can just imagine there is volumes and volumes of literatures. And after all that huge effort, he was dissatisfied in heart. And it's described in the fourth chapter. There is a particular verse where Srila Vyasadeva is saying, he's kind of like, you know, in his, you know, heart, he was feeling actually what the reason is. And he was saying, perhaps this satisfaction in my heart is because I did not sufficiently glorify devotional service, which is dear to liberated souls, Paramahamsas, as well as to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Srila Narada appears on the scene, and as soon as he came, basically there was one shloka where he's kind of like, you know, almost teasing him. He's saying, are you satisfied by pointing that... are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind as the objects of self-realization? So I was thinking, like, this is kind of like, you know, in one sense, you know, it's a little bit funny how spiritual master actually, you know, knows exactly where to poke, to, you know, bring the real essence of the disciple, you know, and to help further progress. Of course, we know this is, you know, both of these personalities are, you know, amazing personalities, and Srila Vyasadeva is literally incarnation of the Lord himself. But still, he is submitting himself in a very humble way in front of Sri Narada. And as basically as his spiritual master, Sri Narada is instructing him in this particular case. Which also brings to the point the importance how, even though, you know, we may be, you know, learned and so on, it is important to always have that humble attitude, because spiritual master will clarify any doubts that we may have in our minds. So in this particular verse today, basically, Sri Narada is saying, O great sage, you have broadly described the four principles. And what are those four principles, as we know? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So it starts with the religiosity. And then basically when there is sufficient pious activity, then there's the economic development, and then that leads into sense gratification. And then after one is frustrated with all that, you know, one seeks liberation. So that is the typical progression in the so-called religious life. But here we find that actually Srila Vyasadeva was not satisfied with that. And Narada is pointing exactly the reason why. So one interesting point here that Srila Prabhupada is mentioning while describing and commenting on this verse, Prabhupada is saying, from this, it is clearly indicated no one can be placed substantially is the key word here, without being engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. And then he's saying, this is the one that kind of caught my attention. Prabhupada is saying, after Srila Vyasadeva basically described the principles based on the four religious performances, it says, and still, instead of giving more importance to the better type of engagement, pointing clearly that devotional service is on much higher level than all those four categories, then Prabhupada is saying he had more or less improperly used his valuable time. I was kind of thinking about that. And we can see from personal example, Srila Prabhupada, he never wasted time. He was always busy translating, lecturing, meeting people, always engaged, 24/7. Very, you know, even when he was taking a rest, it was, you know, very brief. Most of you senior devotees, you know, Prabhupada would sleep very few hours. So we can see from his personal example how a devotee should never misuse his time. Recently I heard something really nice from a Muslim tradition, one of the Sunni poets basically saying, for all the sins in the world, there is a forgiveness except for killing of time. For all the sins in the world, there is forgiveness except for killing of time. So really, I feel like this is a really deep point, which, you know, basically tells us anybody who is serious in actually perfecting the life, in purifying his condition and going back to God, it must be really, really careful how to use every moment that is given to us. Because as we know, there is really no money to replace even a minute of our existence. So then we go on with the purport, and purport points how basically one has to be on a Brahma-Bhuti stage. And as we know in Gita, Prabhupada is saying that one who is engaged in devotional service is automatically on that level. But that is just the beginning, Prabhupada is saying. That is just the beginning of the transcendental ecstasy. One has to go further, actually, by engaging in devotional service and developing, actually, personal relationship with the Lord. And one interesting story I recently read by Satchidananda Swami. He was writing basically in his journal. Every year he goes for retreat in Holy Dham in Vrindavan, and he writes, you know, for devotees, you know, very inspirational, you know, realizations that he basically witnesses while he's there. So most recently, when he came back from Vrindavan, he was kind of reflecting, and he was saying one of the most his favorite memories from the most recent visit to Vrindavan. He was describing, he was going to one village near Varsanam and visiting some small temple, and he said there is a little underground cave. By the way, Maharaj loves to kind of find these hidden places where he would go and chant. I remember one time he even took a group of devotees in Croatia, and we went underground. It was almost like, I would say, maybe 200 to 300 feet underground. And, you know, you walk down all the way, there's like spiral stairs. And once you reach the bottom, it's actually almost like, you know, almost 20 degrees cooler, even if it was like hot summer. Down underground, it was probably about 50 degrees. So really, you know, quite contrast to the atmosphere above the ground. So anyway, we were chanting, and one particular point comes to my mind. Maharaj is very, very he's very descriptive in his way when he describes how one should chant. And he would often say, chant this round as it's your last one. You know, just, you know, imagine you're about to leave this world. How would you be chanting? In what kind of consciousness? In what kind of mood? With what attention? So anyhow, so back to our story. So he was visiting one little temple in Vrindavan, and on the way back, you know, he was walking through some little, you know, street. They were going back to Radharaman temple, and he was followed by villagers and, you know, some of the devotees. And while they were walking, basically, he saw in one courtyard, there was a bed outside. You know, the bed outside the house, on the open sky, basically, under open sky. And on the bed, it was a little kind of like old wooden bed. And on that bed, there was one old lady lying on the bed under blanket. And it kind of caught his attention. You know, it's a really unusual scene. So he came, he went a little bit closer, and as he approached her, he noticed she was lying on the bed, and right next to her there was her prayer beads, which indicates she was she was chanting. And as he approached closer, one of the elders of the village, he comes and he explains, "Oh, this is my mother. She's 103 years old, and she's getting ready to leave." And he pointed to the sky, going back to Krishna. And the Maharaj is, you know, listening attentively. And as he was standing there, the lady spoke to the son in Hindi, and of course somebody was translating everything. And the lady spoke to the son, and she said, I kind of want to read this to you because he tells it so much nicer. Give me one second. Oh, okay. So, "This is my mother. She is 103 years old and will soon leave us," he said, gesturing upwards. The elderly lady had by now become aware of my presence and asked her son in Hindi, "When will I go? I wish to go to Krishna." The son answered with a smile, "Soon, mother, very soon. The Lord will come and take you." There was no hesitation to their voices, no sadness, no shock, no hiding. Dying had lost its terror for mother and son because they were prepared. I remembered my spiritual master's last words to me. "First of all, you have to understand that life is eternal. Someone who understands this has no fear, no regrets, and even in this life, no problem with the appearance of happiness and distress. To understand that life is eternal means you have to understand the essence. Now you can learn, lean back into a certain spirit. Just relax and watch what happens in the movie theater of your life." And then Maharaj goes on basically to explain how every year, you know, people kind of take vows. "Oh, this year I'm going to make, you know, this much advancement in spiritual life, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that," and the list goes on. But he's saying here, many people make incredibly inspiring New Year resolutions, only to find that they can't maintain what they set out to do. However, when you learn to touch the essence, then there is immediate nourishment. I am convinced that our next revolution is a spiritual one. Many, many people will begin to look for answers inside, trying to rediscover their inner self and to establish connection with the divine, the unknown Lord and Master of all. And then Maharaj goes on to conclude his writing here. And he points out something that I found really, really nice. He tells how there's actually two ways to make spiritual advancement in spiritual life. And he's saying one is descending and one is ascending. And meaning that, you know, ascending, we can try to make spiritual advancement, you know, based on our strength, based on our efforts. But he points out that actually better than that is descending, the process where we actually pray for the mercy, for the unconditional mercy of the Lord. So, hear what he has to say. So, often people shy away from deep spirituality, thinking it requires a huge investment of time that they don't have. But the fact is that they can actually touch eternity in a much shorter time than they imagine. This is possible by divine grace. There are two methods of advancing in spiritual life: the ascending path by our own efforts, and the descending path when the Lord invests us with His Kripa Shakti, the energy of His mercy. In the Bhakti tradition, efforts are needed to show that one is not at all indifferent to obtaining Krishna's mercy. However, on this path, advancement is far more effective and substantial via mercy. By endeavor, we are limited to our own strengths. Mercy gives us the wings to fly. Let me therefore suggest how we can come in contact with that alive spirit. And then he says, simply sing and pray more. Simply sing and pray more. And then he says, and this is the key point, he says, the Lord has a soft spot for those who sing His glories. The Lord has a soft spot in His heart for those who sing His glories. So we can see why Shinarada, he is so much stressing that point, that he wanted Shri Vyasadeva to glorify more the process of devotional service. And speaking about glorifying, we find also actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita that word mahima, glorifying. It's used in one particular verse in Madhya Lila. And basically it says, C.C. Madhya, chapter 15, text number 118. And it says, Bhaktira Mahima Prabhu Kahite Paya Sukha. Bhaktira Mahima Kahite Haya Panchamukha. And it says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very happy just to speak of the glories of His devotees. That's the point I wanted to make. That as much as devotee is eager to glorify the Lord is also eager to glorify His devotees. And it says here, indeed, when he spoke of the glories of His devotees, it was as He had five faces. Very nice. By the way, that particular verse is mentioned in the pastime after the Ratha Yatra for Lord Jagannath. Basically, Lord Chaitanya decided that devotees should turn back to Bengal. And, you know, when they were about to leave, you know, he gathered all the devotees and he was glorifying all of them. And then at one point, he is addressing Mukunda, Raghunandan, and Narahari Sakur. And basically, he's asking Mukunda, who is the father? Raghunandan, is he your father, or are you his father? And he's referring to the pastime, basically, which most of you heard. At one point, Mukunda, basically, he was, as we know, physician for the king. And he was a very busy man. So one day he told his little son, you know, please offer this to the Lord, you know, to our family deity. I think Gopina deity, is that right?
Yes.
Gopina. And when the father was away, a little boy, he went to the deity with the ladus, and he just said, eat, eat! And, you know, being, you know, so affectionate to this little boy, you know, Krishna actually took the ladu and started eating. And when the father came back, basically he asked, his son, please bring the remnants, you know, from the offering. And the boy explained, oh, father, there was none left. He ate everything. And, you know, Mukunda was astonished, like, and, you know, he was kind of like, you know, a little bit in disbelief. And then at one point, he asked him to do the second offering, and he was hiding. And the little boy went again and did the same thing. And while Mukunda was observing, actually, he saw the deity ate half of the ladu. And then the boy noticed him and, you know, discovered him. But the point was, when questioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mukunda said, actually, he is my father. Because of his devotion, we are all blessed in my house. Actually, we all are receiving blessings from him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased by his comment, and he actually confirmed, yes, one who gives bhakti is the spiritual master. Even though in this case, like, you know, the little boy was, you know, his son. So anyhow, then basically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes on glorifying Mukunda. And that's when this verse appears. So I kind of just wanted to relate that into the discussion that we have today. So I will finish with the last words. Basically, when we talk about praying, as Sachinandana Swami instructed us to do, the perfect example of praying is defined in the song by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, when he sings that beautiful song, Krishna Chaitanya. So that particular song is really, really beautiful song. But when you read the translation, and Prabhupada also comments, he comments after translating the verses of that particular song, Prabhupada is saying, the whole process is that we should always pray for the mercy of the superior acharyas and keep company with pure devotees. Then it will be easier for us to advance in Krishna consciousness and receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the song sung by Narottam Das Thakur. And as we know, Narottam was praying. He was saying, there is no one more fallen than me. And you, Lord Chaitanya, you came to basically save the most fallen. So therefore, you know, my request should be the first. So that was his humble attitude. And then he's begging for the mercy of Srila Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya and Srinivas Acharya. And then he's begging and praying for the continuous friendship and association of his good friend Ramachandra Prabhu. So this little meditation, I think I will stop here. If anybody has any comment or question, we can try to answer. Yes, Madam Mohan Prabhu.
I was thinking of a verse when we're talking about despondency here. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's that verse 266. For one who's not in Krishna consciousness can have neither a controlled mind, so that basically means passion and ignorance, nor steady intelligence, that's also passion and ignorance, without which there's no possibility of peace, and how can there be happiness without peace? And then in the purport, Prabhupada gives extraordinary illumination on those points where, kind of like he quotes 529, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, that one, in order to have peace, one has to see Krishna as the proprietor, the benefactor, the friend. And here it says, when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, and that he is the proprietor of the all universal manifestations, and he's real friend of all living entities, then only can one have real peace. Therefore, one who's not in Krishna consciousness there cannot be a final goal for the mind. And I remember Dhruva Maharaj gave class where he asked us to have to do some homework on a goal and how do you obtain a goal. So here it's saying, therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. And it's a disturbance is due to want of an ultimate goal. And when one is certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, and friend of everyone and everything, then one can, with a steady mind, bring about peace. So I always like that thing with that sentence. Disturbance is due to an ultimate goal. So the whole mechanism of the mind is summarized very quickly here. And of course, you know, there's the other verses that Krishna consciousness, you go above passion and ignorance, and you gain scientific understanding of Krishna and the mode of goodness. And here it's mentioning the Brahma-Bhuta stage. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, that is so true. And when you mention Dhruva Maharaj, Prabhu's class, yeah, I like that point very much as well. He mentioned yesterday how devotees should actually write journal, and he was talking how back in his early days when he was traveling with sadhus in Vrindavan, he was writing basically description of each holy place they were visiting. He was taking the notes, and I was just thinking how actually it's so important to do that. As you mentioned, without the ultimate goal, the mind can't really find the actual peace. But it is a really powerful process if we actually, even if it's just you know, a few sentences, if we write, you know, every day, you know, just kind of to reflect, how did I do today? How was my japa? Did I wake up at the right time? Did I, you know, did I overeat or whatever? And it could be just for our own sake. You know, it's not like for, you know, world to see, but just for our own sake. And it's interesting when you look back, like maybe like 5, 10 years or like even 20 years, and you see where you was 20 years back, or, you know, if you're still struggling with the same issues, it's very powerful and has very transformational effect. So I definitely like to encourage everybody, including myself, to do that. Yes, Pranagwin.
I was thinking, thank you. In Nectar Devotion explains that how the devotee serves Krishna. So inner intention is given priority, where favorable attitude, and those who are very advanced, like Brajabhashi, like Nanda Maharaj, he actually has this 33 Sanchari Bhav, how he served Krishna actually every day. And the number one of 33 is despondence. Like, for an example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave a whole explanation that, actually Rupa Goswami Pad gave a whole explanation, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave, added with it, that how Nanda Maharaj was crying and crying and crying, and Uddhava is witnessing. And he's saying, I am not really a good father. King Dasarath was a great father, because when Lord Ram left, he immediately left also this body. But I'm so not so good at all, because Krishna left, but I'm still alive. So every acharya actually got into it, and they say, no, actually his position is higher than Dasarath. Because when Ram returned, Dasarath was not there. But when Krishna returned, Nanda Baba was there. So his position is higher, that yes, he wants to leave this body, but he's also worried that when Krishna comes back, that if he doesn't see me, he will be more suffering. So he didn't want to die either. So this despondence has an origin as a happiness. But in the material world, it has suffered. In the purport, today's purport, I was just reading, Prabhupada writes very interesting. He says, the prompt diagnosis of Sri Narada is at once declared. The root cause of despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. So seems like he was aware. Isn't like an English, what is it? Can you see that? In, oh, you stand up.
Yeah, I don't understand it, like on purpose.
Prabhupada writes, prompt diagnosis of Sri Narada is at once declared. The root cause of the despondency of Vyasadeva was his deliberate avoidance of glorifying the Lord in his various editions of the Puranas. So he was aware, isn't like what I understand in English? No, to create this scenery. Because we are discussing Madam Madhumati is not here. She was questioning, I think, to Nagaraj Prabhu, maybe last night, that the Bhagavatam that we are reading, what is that Bhagavatam? Because there is a Vyasadeva wrote a Bhagavatam. 18 Purana, Bhagavatam is one of the Saptik, six Saptik Puranas. Then the whole episode took place of this despondency. Then he went at 1.7.4, I believe, that Bhakti Jogena Manasi Sammak Pranita Amale, the famous verse, that where he went in Samadhi, meditation, and he saw the disease and the cure. He saw the Supreme Lord, he saw the material nature punishing the soul in the back. He saw the whole scenery, and then he came out and he wrote new Bhagavatam. And that Bhagavatam he taught Sukhdev Goswami. Then Sukhdev Goswami, when he spoke to King Parikshit Maharaj, it was like a more, and Prabhupada gave a very interesting also, that Prabhupada says that, I'm paraphrasing, that he did not just repeat it, what he heard, rather he presented with his own realization, which is like a red, cuckoo bird's big, red beak touched the fruit. Prabhupada gave a very nice first chapter, third verse in the purport. And so he said the way he presented, it even made happy to not only his father, I mean Guru, Vyasadeva, father, and Narad Muni. They were like, wow, this is like the best way to. So the Bhagavatam that we are reading, we are very most fortunate in a sense. No, we are most fortunate. Because we got the Bhagavatam, which was spoken by Suta Goswami, written by Vyasadeva, but it was originally he heard from Sukhdev Goswami and King Parikshit, and which was taught by Vyasadeva. So everything is included in this Bhagavatam that we are reading. So this is like a perfect, and we should relish it. This despondence actually a great benediction for us.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Mother Agatha. Becomes more and more sweet.
You said that Satchinandan Swami said that praying for mercy gives us the wings to fly.
Yes.
That reminds me, another place he also said that when we seek the blessings of the Vaishnavas, we're able to then go beyond the limits of our karma.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting, similar. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, that is exactly one thing to realize, that on our own we have certain limitations, but by the blessings of the previous acharyas and our spiritual master, we can actually go beyond our limitations.
What's the difference between, because you also mentioned divine grace. I know there's a difference, and I forget, the mercy and grace.
That Varsana Maharaj was explaining.
Yeah.
I'm not an English person, but what I understood, I'm trying to express in
It was so... I mean, before that, I wanted to say, we should feel the most fortunate living being, not in a pride sense, but in a purificatory sense. Those who are in Alachua, we are actually diving into the most nectarian part of the entire creation, the Bhagavatam, theme of the Bhagavatam, with Prabhupada's commentary. So where Varsana Maharaj said that, yes, it is for every living entity in this Kali Yuga, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, is eligible to get into this Sankirtan movement and relish and make life success and go back home. But question is, what will allow them to be qualified? So, example is like, if you want to drink the tiger milk, Gaur Govinda Maharaj says, you cannot take an ordinary pot to take the tiger milk, because ordinary pot will melt. You need a gold pot. Only gold is the metal that will not melt by the acidity of tiger's milk. It is not a regular, you know, animal milk, cow milk or other milk. Tiger milk are very powerful. So it's very interesting. And he says, how do you get this gold pot? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name is also Gold Lion. How do you get it? He says, it is the mercy of Prabhupada who actually makes us eligible to get this. Yes, Mahaprabhu is giving. Everybody has a, how would you say, everybody has a, not access, not eligible, everybody has opportunity to get it. But everybody has to come with their pot to get the mercy. Who is going to give you that eligibility, that pot?
Spiritual master?
Prabhupada. Not spiritual master. It is Prabhupada. Very specific. Prabhupada's position, I mean, I don't want to brag about it. Prabhupada's position is very unique. I claim myself as a Subhidavadi, advantage taker. That's why I want to hang around till my last breath to Prabhupada's lotus feet. Because on my own, with the process that given by the acharyas, including Rupa Goswami, it is doubtful that I will be able to get it. But by the mercy of Prabhupada, yes, it is possible. That is the grace more than the mercy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, I understood the part about the golden pot, but I was wondering, how do you milk a tiger?
I wasn't even aware that there is such thing, but to be honest. I can imagine, because of tiger's diet, probably the milk is very acidic.
Acidic, yeah. It actually melts.
Very, very good comparison.
I mean, you know, I'm always saying sometimes, because I feel very strongly recently that about Prabhupada's speciality in our present life. I hope every living entity takes
advantage of this movement. Because when, I won't say the name, when one Prabhupada's disciple was hearing another sannyasi's, outside sannyasi's comment, he's a big sannyasi, famous. He says, it will take at least few lives. Then she said, but Prabhupada said, in one life we can make it. So then that sannyasi acharya, he closed his eyes and he said, then he came out after a 30 seconds, he said that? He said, yes, our Prabhupada said that. Then he opened, he closed his eye, and then he opened again. He says, he can do it, I cannot. The normalcy is not like that. But maybe he has a special access. We should take this advantage of it. Really, we should take advantage of Prabhupada's movement, Prabhupada's mission, Prabhupada's teachings. We should take advantage of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I was thinking also now with everything that's going on with the virus, and most of the people are not able to continue with, you know, regular so-called life. This is a perfect opportunity to actually intensify our reading and, you know, kind of going deeper in hearing Srila Prabhupada. There's so much material available, so easily accessible, lectures, Srila Prabhupada's books. One thing I heard recently, it says, donkey with the load of holy books is still donkey.
What?
Donkey with the load of holy books is still donkey. And the reason why, because donkey doesn't read the books that he's carrying. So we shouldn't be like that. Prabhupada wanted us to really read his books. And I know all of you do, but it's still kind of a reminder to myself to take this special time, you know, especially with all the cares that's going out, that we should actually absorb ourselves more and more in just kind of like you said, drinking this beautiful nectar that we have, that Srila Prabhupada presented to us in his books. So I will stop here. Oh yeah, Mother Sukhara.
To tell a brief story of my experience, kind of what Prabhupada was saying, that once one of my students, I was talking with the parents, and she was saying how her daughter, you know, how she was they were initiating another sampradaya, so she was saying, you know, that want to make sure her daughter was on the right track, because the guru had said that if she, you know, didn't break any principles in this lifetime, she'd go back to Godhead at the end of his life. And she said, you know, that isn't possible for me because, you know, before I was a devotee, I ate meat and I did this and that. And I said, no. I said, not like that. You know, Prabhupada said, if we chant 16 rounds and follow the four principles, we'll go back to Godhead at the end of this lifetime, you know. So, you know, you can still go back. She said, no. She said, that's your guru. That's Prabhupada, but my guru said no, that I couldn't. It was like so shocking for me to hear that, you know, and to realize that mercy, you know, that mercy that we're given. Actually, I just looked it up online.
When you said that word mercy or grace?
Let me just read the definition here of grace, and it says the free and unmerited favor of God is manifested in the salvation of sinners and the bestowal of blessings. Because I was thinking maybe they were synonymous. And then, really, I can't find
the other. They could be synonymous, but the function, what I'm trying to say, is a little different. Because one is like the access for everybody, but one is like a, I don't have eligibility, but by their power, they can make me eligible, which Mahaprabhu did not allow.
Here it says the definition of mercy, compassion or forgiveness shown towards someone whom it is within one's power to punish or harm, like in, you know, a Jagan Maha, for example.
Yeah. What Sukhada mentioned, this Mataji and her daughter, if I'm not mistaken, it might be the same mother and daughter, but she had also said that I'm putting her in Banna so that she has the opportunity to go back to Godhead in this life, which I don't have. Imagine, though, she actually conscientiously, even though her guru said something else, that she put her daughter there for that purpose.
Jai. Wonderful. Thank you all so much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.